Listen, do you want to get jacked? Do you want to get bigger, faster, stronger? Are you putting everything you got into your workouts? Well, that's great. That's great. But are you backing it up when you get home? You know what I mean. Are you eating right? Are you drinking right? Are you taking the correct supplements? Well, if you're in need of some fantastic supplements, go over and check out GetMountainOps.com. Some of the best supplements out there geared towards the specific needs of the hunter. They got multi-blended proteins, pre-workouts, post-workouts, multivitamins, which I myself take and thoroughly enjoy. And not only that, but for the fantastic listeners of this show, if you want to get 20% off your order, all you have to do is enter the coupon code NBH20 at checkout, and boom, 20% off right there. So head on over to GetMountainOps.com and get yourself some. And don't forget to head on over to iTunes and subscribe, or check out our YouTube page, Instagram, or Facebook. Now, a little bit. You gotta be a little bit. I mean, because think about what you're doing, right? You're going out there in a lot of times the worst possible conditions there are, right? And now you're saying, I'm going to go get an animal that's been around way longer than I have, right? In these woods way longer than I have. I'm going to take them. I'm going to take them out no matter what happens. I'm going to do that.
Yeah, because I'm awesome, and that's how I roll.
See? See? I told you. I told you.
Well, how come we're not recording
it? Bam! Well,
I am recording this. You're new at this. I press the button when I Skype goes on, button goes on, Phil.
Good. We're good.
What's that sign behind you?
I'm in my classroom here at the shop. It's the Joad, the coach, some coaching stuff that they have in here.
I like that. Number 7's anchor. I can't see number 8 anymore, but it looks like a lot of good stuff on that thing.
Yeah, it's good. It's some of the steps in the shot sequence, more on the recurve side than the compound side, but it's good.
I like that.
Yeah. So Christy, well, are we going to do a formal intro? Or you want to roll with that real quick, or what do you think?
I mean, we can. I'm feeling loose tonight. I'm feeling like no intro. We'll just be listen, everybody, we got Christy Titus on the show, and if you don't know who that is, you better step up your social media game.
Right?
Okay.
I want to start. So Chris, you just said you just came from a workout, right?
Yeah.
Obvious fitness junkie. I mean, NPC competitor, is that right?
Figure.
So, how long have you done that? Do you still compete, or is that kind of stuff that you've walked away from?
I would love to compete. It's such a time commitment, and just right now my life doesn't afford that. So I train insane as often as possible. As far as competing, I would love to. I mean, I'm training right now and I'm eating as clean right now as I would if I were in full contest prep, but I bail on the weekends. It's hard to be consistent. It's hard to keep a routine. It's difficult. And that's like, I just started this challenge with Wilderness Athlete called the Titus 28 Days. And I'm challenging people to, you know, step up with me and give it 100% like I am, and just give it 28 days and see the kind of progress you can make, because it's really remarkable what happens in a month. And whenever I can, I mean, I'm a total gym rat and I love working out and I love training, and unfortunately competing is just not on the table right now.
No, I hear you. It's a commitment itself. And I've never done it. I've had some friends that have. And I've had some friends, wives or girlfriends that have competed in the women's divisions. And just the nutrition aspect of what you have to do, it seems like a full-time job in itself.
About the training. Yeah, there's ways to get around that. Yeah, I mean, like, I cook food when I'm in full contest prep mode. I cook food on Sunday, and I make giant batches. I'll do two different meals where I just do these giant batches of food, and I'll eat the same breakfast, same snack, same lunch, and then I'll vary it up each meal, but I eat the same thing pretty much every day for a week, just kind of mixing up my little micro meals, eating 5 times a day. And it's pretty easy when everything's packaged and weighed and measured, and you're just grabbing a Tupperware and bailing out the door. It's not that bad. It's just planning. If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. That's right. Bottom line.
And I mean, go ahead, Will.
You know, Phil, yeah, I think it's a damn shame you have never done
you know, stepped on the stage, because you, my friend, have the legs for the swimsuit competition. Now, I don't know about you wearing the bikini top, but I definitely think you got the legs for the bottom.
You call me a lady, Will?
I'm just saying, I think you could take a trophy or two home.
The no. Mankini. The Mankini. Real interesting. It's a showstopper.
Yeah, I guarantee you.
You want to talk showstopper, right? Dominic, my oldest son, six, he's been doing swimming lessons the last 3 weeks. And there's some people that walk around the pool that have no shame, and there's a different term to showstopper right there. And, yeah, but anyway, interesting nonetheless, but you're right. That could be perceived many different ways.
What do you do, though, Phil, when your son says, what is that? What kind of answer do you come up with?
When the what's that? Sorry, Mike, come here.
When young Dominic asked Dad, what is that? How do you answer that question?
Are we talking about a male or a female? Well, I mean, what are we talking about here?
I guess showstopper either way, it's tough to explain.
So let me give you a couple explanations. One, there was a young lady that was in the pool, a little bit overweight, but she's having a good time. She was just in a T-shirt, and once her T-shirt got wet, obviously it was a little bit much for most people to handle, just having a young lady with a T-shirt wet. And so they came and had to give her another that's one example, right? And a second example is a young gentleman that happened to be a tad bit overweight, wearing a spandex, if you will. But I don't know if it's the kids that are into swimming that wear the really tight stuff. And I don't know if it's, you know, because they don't want nothing dragging in the water when they're competing. But the dude was he was just all out there, man, you know. And it was interesting nonetheless. But, yeah, I haven't gotten that question yet. So I don't know how to answer that, Will.
All right,
it depends
on
which one.
Let me ask you this parenting advice, right? To anyone out there listening may come across this situation. Dominic comes home. Dad, I saw this really cool thing at the pool. It's essentially a Speedo. Says he wants to wear one. How do you handle it?
Let's go get one. What color you want?
All right, so the Speedo is good to go.
Hey, man, if he's good for it, I'm good for it.
What if it's a banana hammock?
Probably going to have to step back, a little more conservative on that one. Do you have any kids, Christy? You don't have kids, do you?
No, I have dogs. Okay, I'm totally out on this, guys.
Okay.
Sorry, I can't help you. No advice from me.
So then let me ask.
I'd be like, hey, man, they're laughing the people on the couch. Who cares what they look like? It's all good, right? That's me.
So
that's just me.
Let's bring you into the conversation, though. What's your opinion on Speedo / banana hammock or what have you for a male?
I don't judge, man.
It's all good, right?
It's all good.
I can tell Christy is a fan of the banana hammock, as am I, so I don't blame you.
Hey, if you're at the pool and you're working out, I'm a fan. That's awesome.
Good.
There you go. Everybody's body's beautiful, Phil.
I agree. I didn't say it was a bad thing. I just said that it was a eye-catching, show-stopping
showstopper
presence with other people there, because I'm sitting in my chair in the back just kicking back, right? I'm just scoping everything out, and when said person walks across and the three or four people sitting next to me, their jaw drops, that's a showstopper.
The difference when I'm competing, though, is you've spent a really great amount of time preparing to squeeze everything into a very small suit. So it's not like you're mentally not already there. It's okay. You're ready for it.
100%. Yeah. I see where you're coming from. Obviously not speaking from experience, but I did, I'm not stalking you, but I did Google some stuff and that stuff came up, and yeah, kudos. I mean, you look really good competing there. And I respect that a lot because, like I said, from the nutrition to the amount of work that it puts in and the discipline, because like you said, you're eating the same thing different, you know, throughout the week. Most people can't handle that, you know?
Yeah.
It is. It'd be a lot easier to give 28% for 100 days than it would be to give that 100% for those 28 days.
Well, 28 days is just the challenge I'm doing right now. When I'm contest prep, it's usually a 4 to 6 month process of no sugar, no dairy, no alcohol, no processed refined foods, like strict, super strict. For me, especially when I start getting down into below 10% body fat, one bad meal a week or one missed workout equates to not losing any body fat for the week. Because you're so lean already, your body just wants to hold on to everything, and you have to be absolutely flawless, and it becomes not just a goal but a science. And for you to take your body to that level, my last show, I was 6% body fat as a female. To get there, it is truly a science, and it's mastering nutrition, it's mastering exercise, and it's mastering the ability to put it together without dramatically decreasing your muscle mass. And so it's a super big challenge. And so most people, you know, when they start heading towards the row of, hey, I want to do a bodybuilding show or a fitness show, you've got to have a good team of people you trust that can help you take you there.
So what was the first thing after you get done with the competition? What's the first craving you hit?
I ate a cinnamon roll.
Cinnamon, yeah, that's good.
That's it, right there.
That kind of covers a lot in the one, right? You got your bread, you got your sugar, and
cinnamon roll.
Butter.
Every time. Or carrot cake. That's
a good one, too.
Now, are we going homemade cinnamon roll, like Pillsbury, or are we going Cinnabon?
Cinnabon.
All right. We're going deep.
One year I did a show and my grandma came to my show and I had this piece of carrot cake and I hadn't had sugar in 6 months. And I'm like getting ready to go on stage. I'm like 24 hours eating this piece of carrot cake. And my grandma grabs a fork and grabs my carrot cake. It was Cheesecake Factory carrot cake. And she starts eating my carrot cake. And she's like, man, this just isn't very good. And she's eating it. I'm like, don't touch my carrot cake.
And that, like, folks, crazy. Is how grandmothers get stabbed.
Yes. Yeah, like you go 6 months, totally, like you're like sucked down to nothing, and your grandma's eating your carrot cake. It's true love that keeps you from doing that.
It's like, I love you, grandmother, but I don't know if I love you carrot cake level.
You're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know you right now, grandma. You better step back. No.
It was pretty brutal, but I survived. I got the carrot cake, what was left of it, and it was pretty good.
Well, so when was the last time how long ago was your last competition?
3 years ago.
3 years ago. And how many years did you do that?
Off and on for 6 years.
Wow.
What made you decide to get into it?
I was an overweight kid.
You know what's weird? I was an overweight kid. Not much has changed. So there's got to be something a little
more. Come on, Will.
That's all it took.
No, seriously, like I couldn't get like a date to the prom. Like I went with buddies, or I would get a date to homecoming or something, and the guy would just like not show up at all. Like I was that girl. Oh,
tragedy.
Like horrible. Tragedy. It was horrible. It was pretty rough.
And then so you had to flip the script then.
Well, you know what happened? I was elk hunting with my dad, and I was 16, and we'd done this just brutal hike one day and went down in this canyon called Alder Creek in Oregon. And I came out of the canyon and I was literally moving as fast as my chubby little body would push me out of there. And like, I could literally taste like the blood in my mouth. Like I felt like my lungs were burning and I was coughing and wheezing, and it was just horrible. And the next day, my dad kept like wanting to go back in this hole, and I was like, no way. And he'd look over the edge, and that's where the elk are, you know. And finally, I went in there, and it was like kind of just this moment of if I really want to do anything in life and I could never play sports as a kid because I'm still totally uncoordinated. I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm totally not coordinated. So hunting was something I could do. Riding our mules was something I could do. I could excel at shooting sports, and I was pretty good at it. And so I'm like, man, I can't even be a hunter if I don't get my act together. Like, what am I going to do with myself? Because this is my life. And so I started working out.
When you're too fat to hunt, you have reached a trouble stage.
Yeah.
Point of no return. That's an awakening.
It's easy to do, man. Life gets busy, and I'm not going to judge anybody. I mean, I just think everybody needs to try to be the best they can be for where they're at. And I'm not – I don't judge anybody. Like, I'm like – I try to be really understanding of people's struggles with health or injury or illness and I think it's just important that every day you take a step to try to be better, regardless of where you're at. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I agree. That's it. It's just, and that there's so many variations of that saying. If you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards, right? If you're not taking a step, and Dan Staton mentioned it one way, I can't remember how he said, if you're not taking a step forward, you're not standing still. And it's just that, you know, little details you can work on, little things. But you're involved in so many things. I don't know how you have time. I mean, I'm a busy guy. Will's a busy guy, right? But I looked at your schedule, and I looked at some of the stuff you have going on. It's like, holy smokes.
Yeah.
Is what you're doing now with the outdoor industry, is that your full-time job?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great.
It's very, very full-time.
Yeah.
I don't think you can get any more full-time than it is. It's insane right now.
Traveling, shows, TV shows, and
podcasts.
There's just so much. Right? Just podcast guests. So give us a quick breakdown of, like, the current stuff that you're working on right now, or things that you know, that are coming across your desk recently.
Well, it's trade show season, so it's every weekend I'm kind of in a different zip code. Last weekend I was in Grand Junction, Colorado, doing the Cabela's Spring Great Outdoor Days, celebrating the Grand Junction RMEF's 25th anniversary. This coming weekend I'll be in Post Falls, Idaho, and I'll be doing the Bighorn Show in there with Cabela's, doing a bunch of elk calling, scouting, hunting seminars, doing some backpacking seminars, training seminars at the store at Cabela's on Sunday. From there, I'm going to post out to Vegas to hit the ACM's archery shoot, do some Cabela's work, interviewing some different artists down there at the ACM's, and then from there, you know, RMEF banquets kind of stacked up, a couple of them. I've got a 30th anniversary in Bend, Oregon. I've got a 25th anniversary in Indiana. And then it rolls right into turkey season with Wounded Warrior Outdoors. I go with them every year, not to be confused with Wounded Warrior Project. And then from there, I roll straight into NRA and then spring bear hunts.
That all comes before spring?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I thought that was going to be till hunting season in, like, September. Woo!
That takes me through June 15th.
Oh, boy. That's one hell of a schedule.
So you still live in Oregon?
I do. I live in Oregon, You
stay there temporarily is what you're more like it, because you're probably gone more than your home.
Yeah. Last year, you know, like in July and August, I was filming for the National Rifle Association for a series called I Am Forever, and I literally was home 2 days a month in June, July, and August. It was insane. Yeah.
I couldn't hack that. I mean – I don't get me wrong. I mean, you're probably doing stuff that you love, so it makes it worth it. But
for sure.
Anyway, so I got to see Christy. She was she did a seminar in Denver here at the ISC show this year. I did a little talk afterwards, but talk to me about elk calling. So how long have you been able to? I can't bugle like that. I can blow on a bugle tube. With the cheater reed, like the power bugle and some of those, that's what I use.
Yeah.
Just because, and I can cow call with a reed, but I've not been able to perfect the bugle with a reed, right? I guess talk to me about the elk calling, because that's one thing I was really impressed with, because I'd seen you before on some of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation stuff, and I've sorry guys, my son's joining the show, but talk to me about the calls and where you picked it up. How I know that you probably working in the outdoor industry, it just, you know, it made sense or was fitting, or was that something you just took to it since you were little?
No, so the deal with the outdoor industry, like me getting involved in the outdoor industry, was by chance. Like, I started from a conservation background, volunteering, stuffing envelopes, trying to educate women, doing seminars for women way back in the day, like I'm talking 10, 12 years ago in my 20s, early 20s, super early 20s. I started organizing community events. And so it was just an evolution into being where I'm at with a full-time career. It was never never a goal of mine. It just happened. But the elk hunting is something that, I mean, I live for elk hunting and have my whole life, and have been elk hunting with my dad since I was a little girl. And I was 13 the first time I heard an elk get called in, and I was in the woods with my dad in the wilderness of no return, hunting public land. And it was an amazing experience because I'd watched my dad as a little kid watch VHS cassettes in our living room. And I was glad we lived in the country because he'd blow this bugle and his eyes would pop out and the veins in his neck would pop out. And he would make these horrible sounds and his belly would chuckle as he bugled. And it was just horrifying as a kid to watch and embarrassing. And I thought, oh gosh, this is just horrifying. And then, when I saw it all work in the woods, it really changed my life as a 13-year-old. And from there, my obsession with hunting grew to a level that my dad's loves hunting, loves being in the outdoors, but he's, you know, hunts twice a year. And for me, it's absolutely my life. And I became obsessed with it in my 20s and started hunting solo and just started mastering elk calling. And Rocky Jacobs Gibson, the founder and owner of Bugle and Bull Game Calls, was a big part of that. And it's now called Rocky Mountain Hunting Calls. But I had met him at a seminar, and I showed him my calls. I'm like, I don't know who makes these, but they're awesome. And I had a lot of passion for hunting and elk hunting specifically. And he was a pretty big influence in my early hunting career. But it's all self-taught. Everything I've done has been because I've got the gumption to get my GPS and go in the woods and listen to elk on my own time because I don't have somebody to go with me. And there is a compulsion inside me that outweighs any fear that I have of going in the woods alone. And the compulsion is so strong that I literally almost get sick anymore if I'm missing a day in the woods during elk season. I mean, and now even with cat hunting, it's getting that way where I get sick to my stomach if I miss a good snow. So, and I think that's what makes the difference of somebody who's somebody that just enjoys the outdoors and somebody that gets absolutely obsessed with it like me. And it's something that's inside of you. You can't explain.
So how do we go about bottling that up and packaging it? Because I'd like to give some or poison my wife with some.
Someday Phil's going to be in court, and all they're going to have to play is that little snippet there. Guilty.
Well, the difference is your wife, you guys have a family and kids, and I have two dogs, you know, and I've never been married because for me, my passion outweighs the desire to have a marriage and a relationship, and I would rather be blacktail hunting on Thanksgiving or running pursuit season on bobcats than eating Thanksgiving dinner with my family. And that's just my choice. And my family's pretty cool with it. You know, they're used to me not being around and missing every holiday and every birthday. And that's pretty tough to choke if you're in a relationship, you know?
So you just got to find somebody.
Can you cut a snippet of your hair off for me and let me do some testing? I'm serious because here's my dilemma, right? And I think this is male hunters in general because you are the anomaly, right? It's women are growing. The growth of women in outdoor sports it's growing, right? And it's great to see. And me having the pro shop here in Denver, I see the amount of women that start coming through and are passionate and they want to learn. There's the intimidation factor is one thing that is one hurdle, but you know what we experience, and I'm not saying men, I'm just saying that hunters, right, that are passionate about something.
It works both ways.
Well, it does, but there's more men than women right now. It yeah. could definitely change, but obviously this is a male-driven sport up until this point. But women are definitely pushing the needle. But what I'm saying is it's so hard to make your spouse understand that, right? And you can say it all you want. Oh, I just so passionate that when I'm out there, it just makes you feel so alive and it makes you feel in play. You're in your happy place. And then, well, what about when you're with us? What about with you, with me, you know, in the family? And it's like, whoa, that's different. It's a different kind of, you know.
Dude, I live this. What are you talking about? And I date men. And there's men that just don't get it the way they're just not necessarily as into it as me. Or they have kids and their priorities are different than mine. And they all say it's really cool and they all think it's a really novel idea until they're the one getting left behind. I mean, that's just the way it is, whether you're a woman dating a man who can't go all the time or doesn't want to go or has other obligations, or maybe they want to go, it just doesn't work. It goes both ways. I mean, that door swings. It's not just a male or female deal. I mean, maybe I'm a weirdo, but my buddy calls me half dude.
Half dude? I've never heard that.
I'm blaming this on the two of you. I don't know what's wrong with the two of you that you can't get people to see the greatness that is hunting. I turned a vegetarian yoga teacher into a stone cold killer. So I don't know how you're, you know, showing them hunting, but apparently it's wrong.
I hope that
it's not that
continues.
They don't want to go. It's just they can't always go, and not necessarily to the extent that I go. I mean, if I come home from being on the road and I have an hour free at night, I'm running a trail with my dog, or I'm picking up sheds this time of year. Like, there is not a minute where I am not wanting to be outside. I don't watch television. It's hard to find somebody who's as obsessed. And I get that, you know, and convincing someone, I think a lot of it is just including them in it and making it fun for them wherever they're at in that. And, you know, I have lots of great friends that I don't need to have a significant other that's that into it. Maybe you just go with your buddies and get your wife to go as much as you can, or that little guy right there, you know. I mean, that's the key, is just trying to get them as much as you can and hook them, you know, especially for like little kids, setting the hook right now and set the hook for your wife to where it's fun when you go and you guys enjoy it together, and then just embrace that time when you have it, you know.
Yeah, and we're going turkey hunting in 3 weeks, and he's six, he's going to go on his first turkey. He got to hear his first – I took him elk hunting last year, and he got to hear his first bugle, see his first elk in the woods. So definitely – and he's hooked. I mean, he's all in. It's just – it's like you said, it's the lifestyle, and it's my wife, you know, she's a stay-at-home mom with the two kids, so it's – there's always something – right. And that's where when there's a break time, when there's downtime, she doesn't want to do anything about hunting or anything like that. She wants to just go unwind. So, but anyway, I was just joking around, but
cutting she's just a whitetail hunter
and bottling. Well,
yeah.
You keep trying to force this elk hunting on her.
You know, that could be it, but a hunter is a hunter, Will. That's rifle, bow, whitetail, elk, right? A hunter is a hunter, in my opinion.
Yeah, but for some hunters, there's something that gets you way more excited than other types of hunters.
Yeah.
You know, like some of those duck guys. Insanely passionate about duck hunting.
Yeah, I don't have that bug. I'm following you on that, Will. I'm just not there.
You ever talk to a diehard? I mean, I'm sure you've talked to some diehard like duck hunters or somebody who hunts like upland game, and they're super into it. And it's like, oh yeah, that is interesting. And you're like, I don't know what you're talking about, but I feel the passion.
Yeah, we're all on the same team, right? That's the way I look at it. It's just, and like you said, maybe that's what they enjoy a little bit more. I've done some, never been duck hunting, but I've done some upland stuff. It just doesn't trip my trigger like chasing big game in the West. It doesn't do it for me. But there again, maybe I just haven't done it with the right people or done it enough. I don't know. What's your favorite thing to hunt, Chrissy?
I'm down for the adventure, man. Like, I don't really care what I'm doing as long as I'm doing something cool. For me, I live really for archery elk hunting just because of the rut in the bugle and that whole dance that happens between hunter and elk. And it's just, it's an unbelievable experience. But I've been running hounds the last 2 years, and I mean, that's pretty darn addicting, hound hunting. Is unbelievable. And the relationship that a houndsman has with his hounds, and you know, we can hunt bobcats in Oregon 24 hours a day. Wow. So on a good snow, we'll be gone for over 30 hours at a time, and it's just awesome just to go vanish and you know, waist up to your belly. And this year I had to buy a snowmobile because we had so much snow. And I don't necessarily have a favorite thing. I love hunting bears. I mean, I'll hunt anything as long as I'm out there. And for me, again, it's the experience, it's the people, it's the adventure. And I always am wanting to do something where I'm just like super challenged. So sheep hunting's been a lot of fun for me. Goat hunting's been a lot of fun for me. I did get to take a mountain goat a couple years ago. I haven't personally taken a sheep. I've been on lots of sheep hunts now. And there's nothing cooler to do as far as feeling of accomplishment than doing, I did a 13-day backpack sheep hunt. And that was pretty unbelievable.
Wow.
That long with everything you own on your back in the woods is just blows your mind. When you look back at some of the things you've climbed or things that you've done, it's just a very humbling experience, and it's pretty neat.
Yeah, I agree. I got to go on my first sheep hunt last year, and just being that in that country, I love elk hunting, and I don't think there's be anything that will replace elk hunting for me. I mean, just growing up as a kid doing it, but sheep hunting just that one time it's close, right?
Yeah.
And within the next couple of years, I'm hoping to be able to draw mountain goat tag here in Colorado. So it's being able to get up in that country again and chase animals. It's a different game. It's just so different from elk. And in high country mule deer, there's some similarities there for sheep and goat. But yeah, definitely. I see. I know what you mean. It's something that's you have to experience it to know what it's just different. It's just being able to take in that much scenery and that much, you know, that much of God's country and just and it just the peace of the quiet, the silence of everything, and it's a different game.
Well, you get to know people.
Yeah.
You go on a 10-day hunt with a group of people and you figure out every flaw in their character, every weakness in their spirit, and you pick on that over the course of 10 days until it festers, and at the end, like, there is nothing that separates you from the next guy next to you. Like, you know everything, and there's this brotherhood that gets created, and it's pretty fun. I mean, I've made some of my best friends on crazy hunts like that, and I know way too much about them, and they know way too much about me, but it's awesome.
What is your favorite hunt? Do you have a favorite, like, most memorable?
Oh, you know, I'm just – my hunting with my dad is really it gets me. You know, this year we filmed a hunt for team elk, and we were bow hunting, and I got my dad on a lot of – it was either sex tag. I got him on a lot of cows and some spikes, and he passed, and I got him on this bull – and he was a big bull, and he was bugling, and he just missed the big bull. My dad's really hearing impaired and kind of struggles, and we got him set up, and the bull had already went by, and we didn't know. But he ended up taking this just like the small raghorn bull, and it was so cool. You know, my dad works. He's like 64 years old, and he still works full time. Like, he travels as much as me, and he lives for archery season. And when I was doing my interview, I couldn't choke back my tears. You know, I'm talking about, you know, just how hard my dad works and how much a day like that means to him, to where me and him are out there. I'm his daughter. He's my dad. And I'm setting him up to an arrow a bull, regardless of what its head looks like. You know, this is an experience for us. And I don't think there's anything more profound than that. And even if you don't tag something, just having that experience and those close calls and those encounters with someone you love, you know, that episode I'll have the rest of my life, and there'll be a day where my dad's gone and I watch it, and, you know, it'll just take me to my knees, I'm sure, you know, and, I don't think there's anything better than that. I mean, that's where you have to set the hook for your family, you know, and your friends and your kids. Is those are the moments that live beyond you. And those are the things that we pass down. And that's what really matters.
Okay. Now I'm a little bit upset because I agree with you 100%. And Will, you should have waited another 20 minutes to ask that question so we can end on that, because that's, I mean,
I got
it's
better.
So true.
That.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, you better.
That's like a level one for me. We're going up
okay.
to five.
All right. I agree. Like I said, getting to take my son out, and then, but you're right. My dad's 62, and there a couple years ago, I had an opportunity to go hunt New Mexico on a landowner voucher, but it was a pretty premium piece of property. It was at a fraction of cents on the dollar what I was going to have to pay for what that hunt would have normally cost someone. Mm-hmm. And my dad had drawn his muzzleloader tag here in Colorado, and my uncle that was going to go with him, and something ended up happening, he couldn't go. And I was like, yeah. I mean, I didn't hesitate. I went with my dad hunting, and we tagged out on a bull. He shot his bull the last morning of the hunt, and it's just like I said, it was just him and I, and those memories, like you said, it's just something that it will always be there, because I can still remember the first time that my dad took me hunting, when we wall tent and we're back in there. And I can remember almost every hunt that we've been on, you know, and to the details. I can't remember that with all my other buddies, you know, not all of them like that. But with my dad, because there's always been, whether it's a lesson that, hey, you know, you need to think about this, or it's just something happened and no words were said, but you know that, you know, it was, he purposely doesn't say anything because he knows that, you know, that you should learn something from what just happened. So those stories, those memories are, yeah, they're priceless, and there's not enough of them. And like I said, you're in a similar situation with me. My dad's hit 62. He still gets around fine, but that's going to start to slow down. And we were out looking at some potential new hunting ground last weekend, just him and I, and we got to take a drive. And it was a nice long drive for the day, and looked around some new spots and scouting some new spots. But just trying to keep him in mind that he can't get around as well as I can anymore. So, you know, just looking at the properties under that eye, it's different, and it's humbling, because I want to go, you know, I want to get up to 13.5 and go sheep hunt and go mountain goat hunting. But then I have to sit back and say, look, I need to focus on helping my dad here for the next few years, you know, making sure we can cherish those moments. And then the little guy is about that time, it's going to be time for me to take him. So stepping back from the whole ego driven thing, you know, with the cockiness and everything of the hunters that, you know, we started the podcast with, it's also a very humbling, it's a whole well-rounded thing, in my opinion, to where you got to walk into the woods confident, prepared, but at the same time help there to help others as best you can, and because the team effort is better than a solo hunt. I mean, as great as it is to go out by yourself, it's still more, you know, the stories, the experiences with friends and family, it's there's nothing like it.
You know, and that's the interesting, really interesting point to the whole paradigm that is hunting, in that when you think about it, a lot of years your dad probably spent, you know, looking at ground that, you know, either of you, you know, any of us could cover when we were little coming up. And now you're looking at ground to make sure they can cover it. Do you, either of you, remember when, you know, that switch kind of happened where the student became the teacher?
For me. Yeah, go ahead. I mean, I got a story with that with my dad.
Yeah, for me, it was when we really started bow hunting, just because my dad's hearing impairment is so significant that if he walked out in front of me, he would blow into elk, and I'm trying to catch up to him or trying to stop him before it's too late, because, you know, he just can't hear what's going on. And it's been about 10 years now where my dad, he follows me.
Can you remember the first time?
Not specifically like the first day or the first time, but basically since we've been bow hunting. So, I mean, I'm 35 now, and I started bow hunting at 22. So right around in there, I mean, almost instantly with archery, just because the elk make such small noises. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, we'd walk to the edge of a feeding area, and I'm listening for things like their feet and legs pushing brush, or the sound of a cow mew 200 yards away, and my dad's not going to hear any of those things. And it's, I always tell people, you know, even like early archery, when you're calling elk opening weekend, they're not going to most of the time blow in bugling and being loud and gregarious. They're going to slip in really quiet. You're listening for these tiny things like a little limb break or maybe an antler hit a tree. And so your ears really become such a huge asset. And that was it for me.
Yeah. I it's a very similar story with me. My dad, rifle hunter, so we grew up rifle hunting. That's how we learned. And I purchased him his first bow and taught him to shoot and helped him out with that. A couple years later, he was able to take an elk to New Mexico with his bow. So it's been one of those. He since went back to muzzleloader hunting just because he can still hunt with us in the archery season here in Colorado. But he's just, you know, his range with the bow isn't as good as it is with the muzzleloader, even with the no scope rule here in Colorado. So, but he can still 100 yards. He's still good with the open sights at 100. But it's the same thing. It's that, you know, hey, let's slow down, let's back up. This is not like rifle hunting where you just glass them and you try to get in front and, you know, position yourself for a shot. No, there's a lot more strategy and stealthiness that need to be played. So, but it's awesome. I mean, it's like I said, and then learning now, not that I'm teaching my dad anything, but it's just helping him understand a different element. But actually teaching my son now is, you know, the 100 questions. It's dad, what about this? Dad, what's that? You know, did you shoot a bigger elk than uncle did? It's like, Dominic, none of that matters, son, you know?
But yes, yes, still, I did.
Yes, yeah.
Yes, for the record.
Yeah. Doesn't matter, but I did. Much bigger.
But it's cool to see, and just like you said, see full circle, being on both ends of it.
And, well, and I always say life's best lessons are learned while you're in the field with your friends and family. Your sound personal character and those values, those lifelong values, are developed then. Delayed gratification, hard work, doing the right thing versus the easy thing, all of these ethics things, like, hey, you know, yeah, you could probably take that shot, but it's a little too far, or the angle's not quite right. You know, doing what's best for the wildlife isn't necessarily what's easiest emotionally for us as hunters, or, you know, persevering. You know, 3 days of bad weather on a little kid is pretty tough on him. And, you know, learning, hey, delayed gratification. You're not going to win your hunting round on your video game out here in an hour. Sometimes you got to put in 10 days, yep. Which, you know, for a little kid is really tough. I'm not suggesting to do that. But it just teaches these things that really create, I think, more well-rounded Americans.
Yeah. No, and so I've got a question for you. On the other podcast that I do, I've had some guests on, and it's more bow hunting driven on that podcast. But I've been talking to people about an experience that you've learned from, or something that somebody else can benefit from, right? Because as bow hunters and hunters in general, the way we learn is experiences in the field. Mm-hmm. And some of us don't get to spend as much time as others in the field, but still being able to hear somebody else's story about something, you know, I didn't realize this happened until this, or I learned this because of that. Is there something that really sticks out in your mind that you can, you know, say to tell somebody from maybe an experience or just, you know, something in general?
I'm a really tiny person. I feel larger than life, and I feel like I'm this big person and I'm really strong, but I'm actually very tiny. And I've had just time and time again bad experiences with borrowing equipment. Primarily, I'm speaking of rifles. And rifle fit for women and small shooters is of the utmost importance. Number one, for recoil control. Number two, so you don't get scoped in the face. Competency, confidence, all of these things. So I preach to people, especially guys all the time, they want to give their wife or their girlfriend or someone their rifle. It doesn't fit them. The eye relief is not set for them. Inside the optic, the crosshairs aren't necessarily adjusted for that person's eye, if you will, the focus, I should say. Yeah, the length of pull is too long. They don't get a proper cheek weld. There's all of these things, you know, the trigger is too far from the grip, and the person gets behind the rifle and they shoot it horribly. They scope themselves. They, you know, all of these things that happen that create just these horrible experiences, or they even can't even shoulder the rifle without it going into their armpit. And it's just a bad deal. Like, if you really want to take a kid in the woods, or you really want to take a lady in the woods, stop. You really need to make sure that, that the rifle fits them proper. I mean, they can only do with the best with the equipment they're given. Stop.
Sorry. For those who can't see, that's Christy's dog she's telling to stop, just in case you're all wondering.
The dog is, he's licking his back, and it's just gross. He needs to stop. It's just ridiculous.
That's something I've never gotten in trouble for, I'll be honest.
Well, I try to leave Will alone, and he does it on camera, but, you know,
Edited it out later.
It's all good. Yeah, no, that's a great point. And like you said, just proper gear fit is very critical to not only being competent and proficient with your equipment, but also longevity. Like you said, those longer hunts out in the field. If you're wearing somebody else's camo, or your husband's or something, in a women's case, right, and it doesn't fit right, and it's not going to keep you warm, and it's not, you know, or whatever, a pack's too big. It's not.
Yeah,
it's,
I
not
mean, sized camo to me isn't as big of a deal. Like, I can wear your jacket, and I'm not going to die.
Right.
The things that are really make or break for me are backpack fit,
mm-hmm.
you know, getting the correct torso adjustment so that your head's not hitting the top of the backpack, or getting the waist strap where you can actually tighten it down and have the load lifted onto your hips where it needs to go and off your shoulders, and, you know, bow fit, rifle fit, things that are really big deal breakers. Boots, that's another thing. You know, a lot of people, there's some really great boot manufacturers, but I haven't found any American boot manufacturers other than Mindel, which is sold in Cabela's, that has a last that is made for women and not just buying a small men's size. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into having a comfortable trip, and, you know, camo clothing fitting good is great, and that's awesome, but it's not a deal breaker.
But there, like you said, there's so many other things that are, you know, or that can be. So, well, I don't know. I mean, it's there's a lot that goes into that in the preparation side of stuff. And like you said, the better fitting equipment you have, the more apt you are to go practice more, you know, get ready for that hunt. Yeah, I'm very picky with my stuff. There's no reason why any other hunter, women or men, should be different as well.
Well,
for sure.
Think about the wrong fitting bow, yeah. How much that messes you up. You know.
Yeah.
Did we lose Phil? We got Phil.
I'm here. My son's lecture. Sorry, I had to turn the mic off.
That's all right, Phil.
I get scolded from everyone. 6-year-olds included.
He's ready to shoot, isn't he?
No, actually, it's almost time to get him home to get to bed.
Oh,
it's
bedtime. Gotcha. Yeah.
Is it almost that meltdown hour?
You're right, because
you're approaching it. This is the danger zone.
Yeah, it's definitely, yeah. You're right, because if he's got his routine, you know, shower, brush your teeth, get in bed, read him a story, and then it's lights out. But some nights like tonight, we actually come to the shop. We've got a big 3D league that, and he comes to shoot with me. And
stop for a second.
Yeah.
One of you's got a kid on the loose, the other one of you's got a dog on the loose, and I'm just sitting here by myself in the basement for now. You know, one thing I was thinking about is how much training and hunting are similar, right? The amount of time spent in the wee hours of the day, practicing, honing your craft, right, for both sports, and the actual time spent on stage or harvesting an animal are so minute.
Small.
In comparison, you know. It's no wonder you're an addict.
Well, yeah, the journey is where the most time is spent, right, the preparation and the getting there, because, like you said, that harvest or that kill and being able to, yeah, take a couple of pictures. Well, that's all over so quick, and that's really, I don't know, that's where I'm enjoying seeing. I don't get to watch a lot of hunting TV, but I enjoy watching some of the episodes that don't focus just on the kill, because that's just a small element of the story. And I don't know, what's your take on that, Christy? Well, how do you feel about just that whole, you know, little bit of time in with in regards to the kill to everything else?
Well, I train really extensively with a firearm, and you know, I have a lot of people that are like, oh yeah, I'm, you know, Sally had a deer at 100 yards and I just wanted her to pull up and shoot it and she wouldn't do it, or she missed it and I can't believe it and blah blah. And I'm like, well, did you practice with Sally pulling up and shooting at 100 yards on a deer sized target? Because if you want Sally to shoot a deer at 100 yards from that a supported rest, maybe Sally should practice that. And I believe as a hunter, it's our ethical responsibility to an animal to know what our personal limitations are. And if we're a bow hunter, we need to practice under hunting life circumstances. I mean, the Train to Hunt Challenge is a great example of an opportunity for bow hunters to go in, get under, you know, a little bit of physical pressure, under a time constraint. All of that's going to kind of simulate what you might feel hunting. You can do the same thing with your firearms training. I mean, you need to know, okay, if I'm hunting a deer or an elk, which has a much bigger target, how far can I shoot free-handed? And am I able to do it at all? And what is my max range? You know, where am I at? Do I know, am I comfortable shooting up to 400? Is it 300 or 200? And then, you know, when you're in the field, if you've never taken a 400-yard shot, do you really think it's ethical to be pressing off on an animal that you've never even shot a bullet in your life at that range? I don't think so. that's just my opinion. I feel like our wildlife deserve the best we can give them. And if we're going to be hunters and we're going to be out there, we're going to pursue them, we need to be ethical in that approach. And if you want to shoot an elk at 400 yards, then by golly, you better be practicing and you better be proficient.
I agree.
Yeah.
100%.
Speaking of the Train to Hunt Challenge, will you be doing any events this year?
No. I wish. Just no time scheduled right now, you know. Just one of those deals where it's just not in the cards this year.
I did hear your schedule earlier. I didn't hear Train to Hunt on it, so I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, I would love to. But again, I mean, I'm training. Yesterday I did 90 minutes of cardio. I ran 6 miles. I did CrossFit. I shot my bow. I mean, I'm training. I shoot my gun. I shoot about 800 rounds with my rifle a summer in preparation for rifle season. And I'm shooting multiple positions. I'm using standing, kneeling, supported, unsupported. I'm training with tripods, bipods. I'm training off of barricades, fence posts, in varying distances out to 1,000 yards. And so, you know, things happen when you're hunting, and they don't always go right. And it's, you know, there's no bigger devastation than I've ever experienced than not recovering an animal. And when I step in the field and I take a shot, whether it be with my rifle or my bow, I want to know that I've done everything that I possibly can to physically, mentally, and fundamentally prepare to do the best I can for that animal. And ethically, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I roll year-round.
Hell yeah. So how long have you been doing CrossFit for?
Well, I mean, I've been bodybuilding now, or whatever you want to call it, for 12 years. I mean, not competitively, but as far as getting serious into fitness, I have my allied healthcare and nutrition. And, I weigh and measure all my food. I'm like a super neurotic weirdo. I eat every 3 or 4 hours, and I can actually tell you if it's like 15 minutes from when I'm supposed to eat, because my body is just on this really weird clock now. And, it's a life for me. There's no end and there's no real beginning anymore. It just is, I guess.
So are you doing CrossFit though?
Yeah. I do CrossFit.
So how long are you doing CrossFit?
So yesterday I did, 90 minutes on my elliptical trainer, 'cause I'm trying to shed some body fat at a target heart rate cardio. I ran 6 miles last night for more of a high intensity cardiovascular training, and then I did CrossFit for weights.
So, Will, what is CrossFit and CrossFit? What, I didn't know that there was a.
Well, I mean, Phil, you see,
I guess I'm on the outside looking in here.
You see, there's like CrossFitness, you know, which people will think is doing like the high intensity training or HIIT training. I think some gyms call it, where you move from station to station, stuff like that.
It's like circuit training.
Like circuit training. There's people who will say, you know, CrossFitness, you know, it's kind of the, I would say, older kind of thought behind it. And then there's CrossFit, which is, let's see if I can remember it off the top of my head, constantly varied movements performed at a high intensity. No, I can't remember it off the top of my head. But I think you know what I mean.
You know what I think the difference is?
What's that?
And I'm in no way, shape, or form talking down to CrossFitters, right? I do CrossFit-esque type workouts. I don't go to a box unless I go to my cousin's gym and when we're doing a workout, kind of included that includes shooting with the bow. To me, the biggest difference is you guys do the CrossFit, like the real CrossFit, just does more Olympic style lifts incorporated with their workouts, because everything else, whether you call it circuit training or you call it whatever, it's the same thing to me, man. I don't know.
Well, you can scale those workouts to your ability level. So there's some girls that are doing the prescribed weights, which most of the time I'm not, because for me, from a standpoint of proper biomechanics, my lifts and my technique just isn't that good necessarily to stack all the weight on. And so I would rather lift a lighter weight and do it proper than try to lift super heavy and injure myself. So that's, you know, for what I do is I'm not going to go lift weights by myself. And I live in a really small town and I enjoy the camaraderie and the social aspect of that. Cause I tend to be rather introverted. So for me, CrossFit or any type of gym setting is kind of socializing. And I enjoy that. I enjoy group fitness. I'll do a spin class. Heck, I'll do anything. I did a boot camp last week and I'm not opposed to any type or style of training. I've done everything from bodybuilder strict, you know, fundamental foundational strength development training protocol to CrossFit, and there's a place and a time for all of it. It all depends on your goals.
So you've done CrossFit and then CrossFit.
I guess, whatever. CrossFit.
I gotta bust his chops when I can.
I am not, like, some of these girls in my gym blow my mind, and I'm not there, right? Like, that's, I'm just not as strong as them. You can't judge a book by its cover, for sure, in a CrossFit box. You'll walk in and I'll look at a lady and I'll think, yeah, she's like a normal lady, and then she'll just hand me my derriere and I'm like, holy smokes, what just happened? But I'm super competitive, so I feed off of that. I want that. I want somebody in there that's like pushing me to be stronger, because then I'm gonna, you know, ramp it up.
That's right.
Here's the thing, Phil. It's not just Olympic movements. It's constantly varied. So if you're on a good program, there should be a lot of different stuff involved. Whereas, say, train to hunt, right? Train to hunt, legs and lungs. That's mm-hmm. what a bow hunter needs. It's very different from CrossFit in that for CrossFit, the way to test it would be, you know, a few ways. One would be just pull any sport, any kind of physical activity out of the hopper, right? And you should be somewhat prepared to perform said activity.
I agree. No, I'm not talking down to CrossFit at all. Like I said, I'm not talking down it at all. I just, I don't know. I think that I just like to bust your chops a little bit, because I know you're heavily into that game. And
CrossFit, Phil, is a constantly varied functional movements performed at relatively high intensity. I think it
sounds like working out to me.
Yeah,
like,
but there's work it out and there's work it out.
Hey, I don't know. I'm with Christy. Just whatever it is, let's go do it, with the exception of the snatch, because I value my shoulders and my form probably suck. So
you gotta Phil.
No, you know, I don't have to, because I'm gonna tell you something. Functional, that movement, in my opinion, I don't think I'll ever experience doing anything similar to that in a hunting aspect. So because of that, and I know where my goals are, I'm gonna step back from that one, Will.
I've actually geared back from CrossFit the past 2 weeks. Full train to hunt training mode now till
it's good
competition season.
So you gonna bring it then? You gonna be ready?
I'm bringing thunder, baby. I'm bringing pure, unadulterated thunder. And I'm gonna tell you what, I'm doing things I hate. I hate some of the things I'm doing for my training right now. I absolutely can't stand what I'm doing. I miss CrossFit a whole bunch. But you know what? Straight CrossFit will get me no train to hunt gold. So for now, it's going to have to go on the back burner.
How do you know that? How do you know that that CrossFit will get you no train to hunt gold?
Because we have two regional athletes, both of which have yet to win nationals. So that's how I know.
Good point.
Facts. Plus, I've seen Rich Froning run. He's the world's fittest man. And let's just say running. Legs and lungs may not be the CrossFitters, you know, bread and butter.
Yeah.
That's you. In my CrossFit gym, because I run quite often because I have a dog that I call a terrorist, that's usually where I end up
terrorist
coming
dogs.
In strong. He's a terrorist. I have to run him. In fact, they're both being terraced right now because I didn't run them tonight, and I'm suffering the consequences right now.
Well, yeah, we apologize.
And I'm not fast. Don't get me wrong. I just go distance.
Here's kind of the CrossFit.
I'm built for comfort more than speed.
I know exactly where you're coming from. Built to stand and fight, not to run away. Here's the thing. It's like CrossFit. Yeah, we'll do everything. But if you could just not have running in it, that would be super.
But yeah. You know that the running is probably the most critical element that you need in the train to hunt type events. Maybe not necessarily for
archery. Archery and running are the two. Ben Greenfield would prove you definitely need archery. You can't just be able to run like hell.
Yeah.
You know.
No, it'll be fun. So, Chris, it's a great event. We have a great time and shooting the bull.
I did a mini train to hunt last year at the Shoot Down Cancer event with Kenton, and I did pretty good. My time was pretty good. I gut shot my deer, I'm not going to lie, at the 40-yard mark when I was gassed from doing the burpees and the run combination. I pulled significantly. I was pretty disappointed in that, but I ended up finishing pretty good, so it wasn't bad.
Did you beat Ken? I heard you beat Ken.
I don't think Kenton didn't do it. I don't think it'd be Kenton.
I'm just starting rumors.
Yeah. I don't think he did it. I don't think I beat him. But it is, fun.
What do you think of the new rise in fitness in the hunting industry?
I think it's awesome. I think it's awesome. I think it's super great that that people are paying attention to their health and overall well-being, because our country and our nation is at a scary place with obesity and the rise of obesity. And to have something like hunting motivate us to be healthy not only makes us feel better as individuals, but at an intracellular level, we're going to live longer, happier lives. And if hunting spurs that on, then there's no greater reward. I mean, you're going to live longer, you're going to do better in the woods, and it's all around just super positive.
So some would say that there's a rise more recently, but I think that it's always been there. I think that social media has shined a bigger light on what's out there, right? Maybe different events, maybe different people pushing the envelope, but it may be a combination of everything. But you realized it at a very young age, you know, that 16 or whatever you said it was, right, that you knew that you needed to kick it in high gear.
Mm-hmm. That's over half my life ago.
Yeah. And so you put in perspective, and like I said, and you start to think about it, and just to wonder, okay, yeah, there does seem to be a rise more in the last 3 to 5 years or whatever it is, but there's so many people that have been doing it for years. Mm-hmm. So, and the way I look at it, I just see the growth.
And there's
of
some people
media.
That haven't that are now starting to because of hunting, and that's what we want. We want to inspire to be inspired. I mean, we want to take where we're at and our stories and inspire other people with them. And I see women all the time that are like, man, I've had kids, I can't do this and I can't do that. And it's like, well, why not? You know, just because you've had a kid does not mean you can't accomplish something. Just because you were obese as a child does not mean you can't get on stage and do a bodybuilding show. You can overcome just about anything if the right mental attitude, and disability is as much a mental inhibiting factor as it is a physical one. I mean, you see people all the time that have, I work with a group, you know, Wounded Warrior Outdoors, and their hospital referrals, that some people have visible injuries and some are invisible injuries. But I'm going to tell you right now, when you see a man with no legs walk up a mountain to hunt a black bear, you can't give me any excuse you want as to why you can't do something. Like, I don't want to hear it. I don't feel sorry for you. You can do it. If you want to do it, you're going to do it. If you don't want to do it, you're going to find every excuse in the world. And if hunting is that motivating factor that gets you to do it, thank God.
Yeah. So we've mentioned that you're very busy. You work with a lot of different groups, but what would you say moving forward, or what are you most excited to be working? What group? What project? What's that project right now? That's your most, you're really happy about it. You're excited to see where it goes.
Well, obviously, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation has been in my family since I was 6 years old. So it was founded in 1984. My dad and my parents have been members since 86, so over 30 years. And they're my family. That's my home. I'm proud of the organization. We've conserved or enhanced over 6.6 million acres. We've opened up access to over 800,000 acres. It's a great organization. 210,000 members across the country that are doing more for wild places and habitat restoration than that is my passion in my home. Beyond that, I work with the NRA, and I'm trying to work on some programming with them. Last year, I did a TV series talking about the whole show is a backpacking series. I took these two women in the backcountry talking about how the principles we learn and the things we experience in the backcountry really remind us of the foundation that is necessary in order for us to sustain freedom in our country. And that's true. The things that we learn on the mountain remind us of the culture that's necessary for us to keep our freedom. Hard work, determination, never quitting. If you take people that are willing to take a hand out and sit down and quit, that is not a culture that is going to sustain freedom. So hunting really is the culture that, in that mindset of the hunter, is really the culture that our country was founded on. And it's really important that we teach the world right now that hunting is relevant and why. Because in one more generation, you guys, we're gone. We're gone if we don't teach people what we're doing. And so right now for me, that's number one, is sharing with the world, sharing with the people that are supporting Bernie Sanders right now, sharing with the people that are supporting Hillary Clinton right now why our lifestyle is important. They're not the conservationists just because they're part of PETA or whatever they're doing. They're not the conservationists. Hunters are. Hunting is conservation. We're the ones that are stewards of the land and the wildlife. And we need to educate people why having our gun rights is important, why having a hunting license in our pocket is important, beyond everything else right now that's going on.
Boom, mic drop, end of show.
Right.
Do it, Phil.
Boom.
There it is. Hey. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Natural Born Hunter podcast. if you want, head on over to Mountain Ops, put in the coupon code NBH20 to get 20% off your order, because paying for stuff full price is kind of BS, so why do it? Use that sweet code. If you happen to buy some Maven binoculars, which are pretty sweet. I know Phil is actually buying a pair himself. That's correct. They're not being given to him. He is buying them. And if you enter the code NBHGIFT, they'll give you a free gift because you listen to our awesome show.
Yeah.
Even if you're just listening for the coupon codes, you can use them. Go ahead.
Well, excited for that. But
I'm just going to listen for the coupon codes. But
yeah, Christy's only listening to this for the coupon codes.
I want to, for the record, Will, that last question I asked it. So as far as the mic drop, Will, your level one questions never reached that next level. So I had to take it there for you with Christy.
Phil, sometimes I have to inspire greatness from others. Okay.
You're right. I appreciate it. You know, I think we feed off each other very well.
I pulled it out of you. I pulled that out of you.
You did. And I want to say thank you to Christy for coming on the show.
Actually, I'll say Christy inspired me. I'm going coyote hunting this weekend, and I'm super stoked now. I'd like to go hunting right now.
Yeah. I want to go hunting with you right now. I can't. Yeah. It's dark.
I know you do too, Phil. Bring Dom, everybody. I'm ready. Plenty of room. Bring your camera and your guns.
It's party in. Hunt. Let's go.
I like this. I like this. Also,
real quick, hold on, Will. Christy, right. before we get too wrapped up into our little housekeeping issues,
tell
the listeners out there where they can find you, where they can follow you, and show support to the projects you're working on.
Wait, you didn't think I'd say that? You didn't think I'd say that, Phil?
Well,
you inspired me.
Well.
I totally would have forgot. I'm right. You inspired me. Phil is here. I would have forgot all about it. Yes, so please.
It's pretty easy. I'm easy. Just ChristyTitus.com, ChristyTitus.com. All of my Instagram, Twitter, Facebook is just all at ChristyTitus. Just super easy.
Check out a seminar if you guys can, if you see Christy coming anywhere close to you, because she can elk call like a mother. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of women out there more badass at hunting than me, and I will definitely admit Christy is one of them. You know, so it's, yeah. It is what it is. It's what it is, baby.
That's right. Now you can.
Mic drop. All right. Also, please subscribe to us on our YouTube channel, on iTunes. Don't be freeloaders. Come on. We need support here. Instagram, Facebook. Check out Phil's podcast over at Championship Bow Hunting and championshipbowhunting.com. You can see his lovely face and find out why they call him Big Sexy Master of the Mountain States. If you stop into Phil's winking, for those of you who don't know, and it is a very sexy and alluring wink. If I wasn't a straight married man, forget about it. You just stopped into No Limits Archery in Colorado, which reminds me, Phil, I need some arrows. Also,
I got you, Will. I got you.
Also, you need anything, Christy, from any arrows, anything like that? Cabela probably takes care of you.
Right now.
They take care of you. All right. Well, if you're in Colorado sometime and you know you would like to see one of the greatest shops in the state.
She was in Colorado, but she was like 4 hours away.
Yeah, it was a ways away.
Well, if you're ever not, if you're less hours away, you know, stop on in, say hello.
I'll be in there.
He's a lovely man in person.
I can tell.
So check that out. Phil also has the Alpha Bow Hunter Hunting. Bow Hunter.
Alpha Bow Hunting Challenge.
Alpha
May
Bow
28th to 29th.
Challenge. May 28th to 29th. Register. Get on it. Don't be lame. Don't be a loser. Christy Titus will not talk to any man or woman who is not into these things. So forget about it. Forget about it.
Ladies love me. That's right. Talking to all the ladies.
Hey.
The women want to be her. The men want to be with her. You know how it
women.
Goes.
It's all good. You get used to it, Christy. You know, I have.
Yeah.
Right.
On that note, this has been the Natural
Will,
Hunter Podcast.
Will, remind me. I feel like I'm on that show. What is it? Where they wake up in Vegas and they're like, what is that movie?
Hangover. The Hangover.
Hangover. I feel like I'm on The Hangover right now.
Wait, which character would Phil be?
The dentist.
Phil's the dentist? I know what that makes me. I know what that makes me. And I don't. We're not going into this, Christy Titus. You and your smart talk. Because we all know I'm not Bradley Cooper. So on that note, this show is over.